This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Our next session, following on from the discussions this morning about the very different streams of collection management, is talking specifically about issues surrounding collection access. Our first speaker is Christopher Snelling. Christopher joined the Powerhouse in September 2006 as project manager of the Powerhouse Discovery Centre collection stores at Castle Hill. There's a snappy title. And Christopher worked on all aspects of transforming what was a working storage facility into a publicly accessible facility. And he's going to talk to us about that project today. Thank you.
Good morning and thanks everyone for the opportunity to speak today. Now hopefully this technology will work. I should start off by declaring I'm not a curator, I'm not a conservator, I'm not an archivist, I'm not a registrar. I guess I'm a museum manager, but I'm also a marketing person, I hate to say it, by career. So I have worked in museums for quite a long time, but more in the marketing area. So I guess what intrigued me about this project was that it was a completely new project, and for me that was really exciting, but it was also about public access, and I've been very passionate about museums and public access for a long time. So hopefully I won't go over time. So we've been open a bit more than 3 years now, and I thought I'd take you through a little bit of history about the site, then talk to you a bit about some of what I did in terms of the business model for opening to the public, touch on a couple of the programs we currently run, and then a bit of, I guess, a reflection on what I think some of the successes we've had in the last 3 years, but also what some of the things you need to think about that have been challenges for us, some of which we've solved, and some of which I don't think we can solve necessarily because of some of the constraints of the existing site. So what are we? I mean, we're the off-site storage and collection care facility, and it's important that the word collection care is in there because part of the programs we run and part of the experience of visitors is very much focused on that. So the museum purchased the site at Castle Hill. I don't know if anyone knows Castle Hill. It's about 35 minutes out of the city in Sydney, in the northwest, in the 1940s, and it was first a plantation for oil research into eucalypts for about close to 30 years. And those photos actually show the plantation on the left and the distillery on the right from the late 40s, early 50s. And then from the 70s, the museum started looking at the site more for storage. So that gives you a bit of a timeline on how the site unfolded in terms of storage, but I've also got a map which shows it a little bit better. You can see that 2004-2005 is really the period when a large consolidated effort went into moving a large part of the collection from mostly rented storage in the city out to Castle Hill. It was called the PATH Project, but one of the staff also told me yesterday they wanted to call it the BITCH Project. I was told I had to throw in this joke, which stood for bringing it to Castle Hill. But in the end, the museum decided to go with the PATH Project. So this is the site at the moment, and the first orange buildings, that's the 1970s, 1980s portion of converting buildings and storage facilities. Then in around 2000, the first of the very new buildings was built, and then 2003, 2004, the two other large buildings. The display store is the building that I'll focus on mostly, which is the purpose-built public access building. That shows the interior of one of the very large storage buildings, the largest one on site. This is at the beginning of the fit-out for collection storage. And that's a more recent... That's actually not the most recent shot. It's probably about 2 years old now. Wide-angle lenses can do amazing things. This is the display store, the purpose-built public building, and it is the first building you approach when you enter the site. You can see that it does have quite an industrial feel, and one of the things that I was very passionate about with the project was not about building a mini powerhouse in northwest Sydney. It was about a different experience so that people didn't lose the sense of being in a storage facility and some of the rawness, I guess, of the collection storage ambience. This is the main foyer that you come into, which is probably the only large open space we have to work with at the moment for the public. And on the wall, there's some large banners that give a sense of the behind-the-scenes area, some of which you actually can't go into. And the showcases, black showcases in the foyer on the right, talk about the early history of the site and some of the oil research project. This is the large downstairs exhibition gallery space, which is dedicated to transport. And Jennifer mentioned that one of the, approaches to the choice of objects here was to look at objects of local, state, and in some cases national and international significance. And I guess one of the things about the visitor experience here, which was touched on in the previous session, is that it's not a linear experience. When you get upstairs, it is thematic, but it is very much about people discovering the stories about the objects and making their own decision about their own journey through the space. This is upstairs, and you can see that there are banks of drawer and shelf units. All the drawers can be opened, and I'll show you a picture in a second. But they've been themed, so I think the bank in the foreground is agriculture. So you've got drawers that deal with collection objects from that area. And I think the right-hand bank of drawers actually has wall samples in it, which also Jennifer touched on. That shows one of the drawers. There's about close to 200 drawers. And each drawer has been fitted out by the conservation team to actually take the specific objects that have been selected. Okay, just a little bit about what some of the aims and objectives were for the project. Obviously, you know, to create a public presence in Western Sydney was very important for the museum, and to extend access to the collection. And I touched on before about creating, I guess, a new visitor experience model, and I looked a lot around the world using the net to try and find comparable experiences, and there were not, 3 years ago, there were not a lot of models. There were some, mostly in the US, and there was a couple in the UK. There are more popping up all the time, but it was very much about, I guess, trying to make sure that the experience touched on the fact you were in a storage facility, but also it had that sort of raw and directness to the collection. To achieve 40,000 visitors by the end of 2009, I'm happy to say I did the statistics the other day. I think we're at about 53,000 now, which is pretty good. Maintain a significant percentage of Western Sydney-based visitors. At the moment, it's about 62%, which is very good. Quite a large percentage of our visitors are school children, and because of our location, it's actually very economically cost-effective for schools in Western Sydney to visit us. Develop a range of specialist visits and programs, which I'll touch on, and also a range of special events that really draw, I guess, on aspects of the collection. I did a big SWOT analysis also before we finalised the business model, which was an interesting process to go through. And I used, because I was new to the powerhouse, it was an opportunity to get some internal and external stakeholders around a table and really try to, I guess, analyse what we thought would feed into the business model. One advantage I had is that I lived in Western Sydney, so I guess I kind of knew quite a lot about the location and what its pros and cons would be. Sorry, this might be a bit small, and I won't read them all, but I might just touch on a few of them. One of the things that I investigated was that there wasn't a lot of competing cultural/museum attractions in the area. Rouse Hill House was probably the closest one that we had. And so I thought, obviously, there was a strength to really use the powerhouse brand and name and extend that, so that was very important. The relevance to the local area, and I thought the history of the site and the plantation and all that was very interesting, and it added another dimension to what we could talk about. Day one, working from the powerhouse, I'd been sitting at an empty desk trying to log into my computer, and within 10 minutes of being on day one, the phone rang, and it was the economic development coordinator from the local council in Baulkham Hills ringing to introduce herself. Now, I thought that was really kind of interesting that that was my first phone call. So Support of local council has been really important for us and has actually grown and grown, and I'll touch on that a bit later. Location, very highly visible area in terms of where we are and the intersection we're on, but there are also some negatives to that. And it's a very highly residential, the residential growth in the area is very high. Some of the weaknesses, we have really bad public transport. We rely on buses and they tend to change the buses and the timetables quite a lot. People, I'm sure, know about the failed Northwest Rail Link. That would be really good for us. Not sure, and I've put in remoteness of site from the main museum. It's really about an operational issue. We sometimes talk about being a bit like the stagecoach waiting for the mail to arrive. It can be frustrating at times. Limited comparable business models, I touched on that before. I've put reliance of volunteer support, and you might wonder why I'm saying that's a negative, only in the sense that we only have 4 staff and I have 56 fantastic volunteers who are really, really important to delivering the programs we offer, but there is a strong reliance on volunteer delivery. So from my point of view, that at times can be challenging. And we don't have a cafe or food facilities, and we get asked that all the time. We have come up with one solution for that. Some of the opportunities, creating a destination in the local hills area, we certainly saw that as being a really good thing. The opportunity to, I guess, build on the knowledge and expertise of the museum. Increase awareness of the museum's collection, and hopefully that would spur more interest in people being interested in supporting the collection. I will say, since we opened 3 years ago, collection donation inquiries have gone up 400%. I said inquiries, not acquisitions, which has been something that's been a little bit hard for us to manage because there's a bit of a perception with the public that all the inquiries should come to us, not the main museum. So we do a lot of fielding and forwarding on inquiries. But I think that's a good thing, but it's also challenging, I know, for the curators to respond to all the inquiries. And also the last one I'll touch on about being a hub for regional New South Wales activities. We work quite a lot with the regional services area of the museum and have staged quite a lot of programs at Castle Hill for regional audiences. I mean, being able to get right off the M7 and literally we're about 2 km from the exit is really handy. Lastly, threats. Obviously, the potential that public access could have on the collection over time. There is a proposed T-way that may be very detrimental to our entry points to the site. What's going to happen with the TAFE site next door to us, because we do have access through their site through a driveway, and obviously, you know, if there are more and more cultural competitors in the marketplace, and obviously my volunteers who are an important resource, potentially replacing them over time. All right, a little bit about the business model we established. We open Tuesday to Friday. During the week, we don't encourage drop-in visitors. We don't turn them away, but we really run as a kind of booked group facility during the week. At the moment, our business is split about 65% school groups and about 35% mostly seniors during the week, with a mixture of some specialist groups like historical societies. We had the bus and tramway society yesterday, actually. So that's kind of the mixture, and it's interesting that school groups is actually on the rise for us, and at the moment the seniors audience has been going down a bit, and I think that's a bit of a post-GFC discretionary income issue, and I'm hoping that's only a short-term glitch. We open one Saturday of the month, 10 months of the year, and then we open 4 casual family visits during the school holidays. We run tours of the main building, the display store, and those are either self-guided or hosted by volunteers, and we have slightly different price points about how we run those. We also offer a simple morning tea package for seniors groups, which gets a little bit around the no cafe issue. We're currently developing some theme tours in the main building. Not a lot of the objects in the main display store change, so what we're trying to do is find new ways to tell new stories. And we've been working actually with a group of my volunteers to develop some theme tours of the main building as opposed to a general tour. And at the moment we're developing one on transport, one around nostalgia. And The third one, The Unseen Spirit, is actually an idea from a volunteer, which is about in-depth stories about people behind certain objects in the collection, which I think is a really nice approach. And then we offer some access for supervised small groups into some of the other stores, and they range from a site tour, which is a bit of a glimpse behind the scenes, even though somebody said we should get rid of that word, and maybe we should. A more focused behind-the-scenes visit, and then a collection-focused visit is actually an in-depth visit with a curator. So those require quite a lot of logistics to set up. At the moment, public access is pretty much limited to those two buildings. We're in the process at the moment of doing some more fit-out to include the very, very large building that I showed at the beginning, but at the moment it'll only be the lower level. We don't have a lift in the large building to the upper level, so from a disability access point of view, that creates a bit of a challenge for us. A bit behind the scenes, this is one of the areas that we do provide supervised access to. This floor of the building next to the main building includes the furniture collection. Downstairs is the car collection, hugely popular. The Olympic Games collection, we're coming up to the 10th anniversary in September and we're doing a whole range of special programs around that. It's an example of a small group of visitors for the car tour. School holidays, we very much use the theory that we build all the programs around the collection. So this was last year in April, we did a whole gypsy themed holiday program, this is Madame Zelda, and it was built all around the gypsy caravan that was recently donated to the museum by Jack Thompson. So we always try to use the collection as a starting point. We develop specific talks about objects. The reason I chose this one is I have a volunteer who's invested a lot of time in a talk called Decoding Harry's. It's a 15-minute talk, and she just doesn't talk about the history of Harry. She talks about every piece of advertising on there. She talks about Harry is the underdog, Pepsi is the underdog to Coca-Cola. Do the Right Thing, you can't see it, but there's a Do the Right Thing sticker on the side and how that was a very important campaign in Australia. So it's a really interesting way of taking not just a basic story about an object, but really researching it to the point of becoming quite an intriguing experience for visitors. This is the Stanfield mousetrap making machine. Again, an amazing object that everyone absolutely loves. And we've spent quite a lot of time developing kids' programs and talks around that. I mentioned we do work with the Regional Services Division. We've done a recent event for the Australian Dress Register. We've done paper and textile preservation and conservation workshops. We've run a few things called Conservators Advice Banks, a bit like Antiques Roadshow, where we allow people to bring in objects, but it's about conservation, not valuation. And we've also done some workshops for volunteers and other organisations. We do special events. Seniors Weeks is on the left. We did tours and talks about the music collection, including some performances on pianos. And then on the right, we did a stencil art workshop for kids for Youth Week. NAIDOC Week, History Week. We're developing an event for later this year around the Dalton collection. We have a very big collection of Dalton ceramics called A Date with Dalton, which will be an in-depth lecture about the collection with the museum's curator of ceramics, followed by high tea. So that should work out really well, and Dalton's involved in that. And I'm hoping to bring the Youngblood Designer Markets, which the PAS does in the city, out to Castle Hill. Okay. This is the last two slides. Some key learnings, I guess, from the project for me. The first one is, and I don't know who it applies to here, but if you're dealing with an existing site, which I was, the first thing is to do a really good risk assessment to understand what levels of public access you can sustain on the site and where those can occur. From my point of view, I think trying to create storage areas that include a mixture of public and non-public, so you may have part of the area for the public and part not, for me, works best. People love going behind the scenes. They think they're the only group that's ever done it. There is a wow factor. Every time we take a group in to see the Olympic Games costumes, they think they're the first group that's ever gone in there. So I do think that mixture, as opposed to saying this is the building for public and this is the building not, if you can try and find a way to have mixed access, I think it would work better. But you need to clearly define the difference between what is public and what isn't. Ensuring appropriate site infrastructure and facilities for public access, I can't say toilets enough. When you're dealing with school groups, there must be people here who's dealt with public programs and school kids. You can never have enough toilets. We've just been granted some capital works money to build a new external toilet block because we're not coping with the toilet issue. If it takes 25 minutes to toilet kids before the program starts, it doesn't work. And presentation rooms and assembly areas, and where are they going to put their school bags, and where are they going to put their lunches so they don't get hot, and you know, all these things you don't always think about. Establishing site capacities and protocols so you don't jeopardise the safety of the collection is really important. The next one, I think, sort of touches on what we've talked about this morning. I really think, and maybe it's me, I feel a bit like a broker in the museum, but you've got to have everyone on board. You know, you can't have conservation on board and registration not on board, because I know that there are times where conservation's the boss and the next day registration's the boss, and it just doesn't work. So you have to try and develop a way to get everyone on board. Everyone's in support of what you're trying to do about public access, otherwise it won't work. And establish guidelines for how you're going to run behind the scenes to ensure both safety of the collection and visitors. We have a bit of a maximum 20 people per group, and it's normally a minimum of one staff member and two volunteers is how we run those. And we have certain areas of the building roped off, so the groups have to stay together. People can't wander off, and it works pretty well. Last slide. Successes. I mentioned 52,000 visitors. We've launched seven school programs so far, and we use the education collection, which Jennifer touched on, which are objects that have been either deaccessioned or donated specifically for use by the public. So all our school programs have hands-on aspects to them, and I brought information on our school programs. If anyone's interested, you can ask me later. Built really good strategic relationships with local council and key stakeholders. I'm part of the Communities New South Wales Western Sydney Cluster Group, and we're working on a special project at the moment. We won a couple of awards in 2008, which is pretty good considering we'd only been open for a year. Community contribution and customer service, and we were a finalist for Business of the Year, so I was pretty impressed with that. We have our own sponsor for the Discovery Centre, and we've had that for 4 years, and that's really good, and I'm hoping that'll continue. I mentioned that we're extending access into an additional store. We're always trying to look for new, interesting ways to expand our special events program and target specific audiences and work on professional development. I'm building a business case at the moment for a major annual weekend event at the Discovery Centre. And I'm hoping to expand the program to include tertiary, which we're not doing at the moment. And we're in the process of redrafting a master plan for the whole site to hopefully upgrade the remaining old 1970s buildings down the back of the site. So hopefully that'll may come off. And that's it. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.